While prevention and treatment programs are one approach to drug abuse, sociologist Elliot Curry argues that we have to go a lot farther. Like Falco, he says that law enforcement has its limitations and has not deterred the bulk of illegal drug activity. Drugs, he says, are inextricably linked to the culture of poverty, which breeds hopelessness. Curry is the author of the new book, Reckoning, Drugs, the Cities, and the American Future. While Curry acknowledges that drugs cross class lines, he says it's not destroying the middle class the way it has taken its toll on the urban poor. I asked him why the drug problem has gotten worse.
I think the primary reason has to do with the radically deteriorating conditions for people who are living in the inner cities. We, I think, don't adequately realize what a disastrous impact the policies of the last 10 or 12 years in particular have had upon low-income people in the United States. And I should say that when I talk about cities, I'm being a little bit euphemistic, because the same processes have happened in small towns, they've happened in rural areas. But what you have seen, I think, is a really radical diminishing of the life chances of people in the lower third of the income scale in American society in a variety of ways. Declining opportunities for good work at decent wages, rising levels of poverty, greater concentration of people in communities where other poor people live and no one else lives, radically diminished public services, radically diminished health care, the destruction of low-income housing, the inability to find a place to live, all of these things put together have created a situation that's really unprecedented for people at the bottom of the scale in the United States. And that really is the breeding ground for the drug problem.
You write that there have been a number of studies to show that a certain number of addicts recover without any kind of formal treatment. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily have to go through a 12-step program to get better. Does anyone know what are the conditions that make somebody get better, that make them give up their drug habit?
I think we do know a lot about that. Of course, we could obviously know more than we do, but I think the brunt of the evidence would go something like this. It would say that basically what makes people get better, whether or not they're in a formal treatment program, is what I would call having a stake in a drug-free life, which means that you have the possibility of a stable family life, that you have the possibility of decent work that helps to structure your life and give you a good reason for being clean and sober. And when you put both of those things together, work and family, I think they're two of the most important necessities for getting off of drugs. And that, again, it applies to whether you're in a treatment program or you're trying to kick drugs outside of a treatment program.
But you can't just build healthy families. I mean, that takes generations to create a healthy family.
Well, certainly you're right. I mean, creating healthy families is not something that we can do by snapping our fingers and decreeing it to be so. On the other hand, our hands are not tied. We know a lot, I think, about the conditions that make for healthy families. In my book, for example, I talk about certain kinds of family policies that I think would help a great deal along this line, including doing something about our fragmented and totally inadequate child care system in the United States, for example.
Well,
I talk about parental leave policies, about family support programs, and a number of things that I think we have excellent evidence work very well and would really help families.
So you're talking about then creating a more equitable child care system, family leave policies that allow someone to take care of family problems without having to pay the price at work, programs
mm-hmm.
like this?
Yes. And I think child care is especially important. You know, it's kind of funny. I often get people look at me somewhat askance when I say that a better child care system would be an important step in dealing with our country's drug problem. But it makes perfect sense. People who are stressed out, as families so often are, as parents so often are, by the conflicting demands of family and work, people who have no place to put their kids so they can't even join the labor force to get a job, and so they can't improve their incomes or have the possibility of a decent life in the future, are people who are ripe for drug abuse. So helping those people to deal with their needs for child care, with their needs for flex time between work and family. These things are enormously important.
What kind of a job policy do you think would be effective for helping many of the people in the inner city who are at risk for drug use or drug dealing? And how could they be trained to be productive parts of society and also feel that they have a future and a stake in the future?
Well, you've put your finger on what I think is absolutely the central and the most and the toughest part of the whole problem, at least as affects the problem of drug abuse in the inner city. I think what we're going to have to do is really radically revise the way we think about jobs in America. It's not going to be enough simply to create a few training programs for disadvantaged people in the inner city. We're going to have to do some serious efforts at job creation because of what's been going on in our economy. Our economy is shedding good jobs right and left. You can pick up the newspaper virtually every day and read of yet more layoffs, of yet more people without decent wages and decent benefits. This is a very critical structural transformation in our economy. And among other things, what it's going to do, what it has done already, is it has enormously increased the vulnerability to drug abuse. So I think we're going to have to deal with that directly. It's going to mean policies to try to upgrade jobs in the private sector of the economy. And equally importantly, I think, we're going to have to bite the bullet on public job creation. We're going to have to recognize that our private economy may simply be unable to provide a sufficient number of good jobs of the kind that really provide someone with a stake in their society. So we're going to have to make those jobs. And there's obviously no shortage of work that needs to be done.
One of the things that you suggest is to look at this issue of infrastructure, the fact that we need more roads, we need better transportation, public mm-hmm. transportation. And you suggest really linking that with some kind of job corps or job creation, job building program. Describe how that would work.
Well, I think we've come to an agreement in the last couple of years, especially and across a wide chunk of the political spectrum in this country, that we do need to put a great deal more resources into rebuilding and especially maintaining the infrastructure, particularly if we think about that term broadly, not just to include roads and airports and railroads, but also the social infrastructure, the schools, the healthcare clinics, and a number of other things which we've sadly neglected for a generation. I think that the great thing about working on the infrastructure is that we can provide jobs at the same time that we are literally rebuilding our communities from the ground up. It's a wonderful opportunity to plug into, for example, a youth employment program so that we can be training some disadvantaged kids for good jobs of the kind that that go into infrastructure work, construction jobs, maintenance jobs, and a whole range of things which are good, which are well-paying, which are challenging, and which can provide a stake in the future for people who now don't have it. It's a largely untapped area. We have, there are all kinds of very fancy mathematical calculations of just how many jobs we can create per $1 billion of investment in the infrastructure. And it's all very compelling. I think this is a place where we could really do a lot of good and kill several birds with one stone.
The American Bar Association talked about the fact that so much is being spent, at least in the criminal justice system, so much is being spent on drug offenses. And do you see organizations like this beginning to see the limits of the old way of dealing with drugs and the people, you think the people are really wanting to try some new ways of dealing with drugs?
I think so. I think that things are turning. I think that they're changing. And I think in part it is because of the enormous fiscal costs of what we've been doing so far. I think we had this notion that we could somehow just put people behind bars in ever-increasing numbers, and then the problem would go away, and it would be, in some sense, costless. We expected that it would have much more of an impact than it, in fact, did. Well, now we're seeing the problems with that kind of reasoning. We have spent billions upon billions of dollars to the point where our expenditures on corrections, for example, here in the state of California, have helped to bankrupt us so that we are beginning to lose our educational system and our public health care system and practically every other public institution that we have. And so the people who are in charge of governing the states are beginning to look around them and say, hey, this just isn't working. We're going broke and the problems are not going away. So let's look for alternatives.
Elliot Curry, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Elliot Curry's book is called Reckoning: Drugs, the Cities, and the American Future. I'm Marty Moskowain, and this is Fresh Air.